Chapter 11, Princess Batshi. Now I must tell you quickly about everything that happened while Harun was away in the old zone. Princess Batshi Chatterjee, you will remember, was being held prisoner in the topmost room of the topmost tower of the Citadel of Choop, the huge castle built entirely of black ice, which loomed over Choop City like an enormous pterodactyl, or archaeopteryx. So it was to Choop City that the Guppy army came, with General Katab, Prince Bolo, and Mudra, the Shadow Warrior, at its head. Choop City was in the deep heart of the perpetual darkness, and the air was so cold that it would freeze into icicles on people's noses and hang there until it was broken off. For this reason, the Choopwallas who lived there wore little spherical nose warmers that gave them the look of circus clowns, except that the nose warmers were black. Red nose warmers were issued to the pages of Gup as they marched into the darkness. Really, this is beginning to look like a war between buffoons, thought Rashid the storyteller as he put on his false red nose. Prince Bolo, who found the things distinctly undignified, knew that a frozen icicle dangling nose would be even worse. So he sulked terribly, but never stuck his nose warmer on as well. Then there were the helmets. The pages of Gup had been allocated the oddest headgear Rashid had ever seen, by courtesy of the walrus and the eggheads back at P2C2E house. Around the rim of each helmet was a sort of hat band that lit up brightly when the helmet was worn. This made the pages of Gup look rather like a regiment of angels or saints, because they had shining halos around their heads. The combined wattage of all these halos would just about enable the Guppies to see their opponents, even in the perpetual darkness, while the Choopwallas, even with their fashionable wraparound dark glasses on, might be somewhat dazzled by the glare. This certainly is state-of-the-art warfare, thought Rashid ironically. Neither army will be able to see properly during the fight. Outside Choop City lay the battlefield, the wide plain of Batmat Karo, which had little hills at each end, where the rival commanders could pitch their tents and watch the battle's course. General Katab, Prince Bolo, and Mudra were joined on the Guppy command hill by Rashid the storyteller, who was needed because only he could translate Mudra's gesture language to the others, and a detachment or pamphlet of pages, including Blabbermouth, to act as messengers and guards. The Guppy commanders, all looking slightly silly in their red noses, sat down to a light pre-battle dinner in their tent, and while they were eating, a Choopwalla rode up to meet them, a little clerky fellow wearing, on his hooded cloak, the sign of the zipped lips, and carrying a white flag of truce. "Well, Choopwalla," said Prince Bolo dashingly and rather foolishly, "what's your business? My, my," he added impolitely, "what a measly, weaselly, sniveling, dribbling sort of fellow you are." "Spots and fogs, Bolo," boomed General Katab. "That's no way to address an ambassador who comes under a white flag." The ambassador gave an evil little grin of unconcern and then spoke. "The High Cult Master Khatam Shud has granted me special release from my vows of silence so that this message may be delivered." And he said in a low, hissing voice, "he sends you greetings and informs you that you are all trespassing on the sacred soil of Choop. He will neither negotiate with you nor give up your spying, nosy perker of a bat sheet. And, oh, but she's noisy too," the ambassador added, clearly speaking of himself for himself now. "She torments our ears with her songs, and as for her nose, her teeth." "There's no need to go into that," interrupted General Katab. "Drat it all, we aren't interested in your opinions. Complete your confounded message." The Choopwalla ambassador cleared his throat. "Khatam Shud, therefore, warns you that unless you retreat at once, your illegal invasion will be punished by annihilation, and Prince Bolo of Gup will be brought in chains to the citadel so that he may personally witness the sewing up of Princess Batshi Chatterjee's caterwauling mouth."
"Knave, scoundrel, rapscallion, bounder, rogue!" shouted Prince Bolo. "I shall cut off your ears, have them sautéed in a little butter and garlic, and served to the hounds."
"However," continued the Choopwalla ambassador, ignoring Bolo's outburst completely, "before your utter defeat, I am commanded to entertain you for a moment, if you permit. I am, if I may immodestly say, the finest juggler in Troop City, and am ordered to juggle, if you should so wish, for your delight. Blabbermouth, who was standing behind Prince Bolo's chair, here burst out, "Don't trust him! It's a trick!" General Katab, with his love of argument, seemed perfectly willing to discuss this possibility, but Bolo waved a royal arm and cried, "Silence, page! The rules of chivalry demand our acceptance." And to the Chupwala ambassador, he said, as haughtily as he could manage, "Fellow, we will see you juggle." The ambassador began his performance. From the depths of his cloak, he produced a bewildering variety of objects: ebony balls, ninepins, jade statuettes, porcelain teacups, live terrapins, lighted cigarettes, hats, and flung them into the air in mesmerizing hoops and whirls. The faster he juggled, the more complicated the juggling became, and his audience was so completely hypnotized by his skill that only one person in the tent saw the moment at which one extra object was added to the flying cavalcade, a little heavy rectangular box out of which protruded a short burning fuse. "Will you, for Pete's sake, look out?" yelled Blabbermouth, rushing forwards and sending Prince Bolo and his chair flying sideways. "The guy's got a live bomb!" She had reached the Chupwala ambassador in two strides, and, using her sharp eye and every ounce of her own juggling skills, she plucked the bomb right out of the rising, falling, dancing array of objects in the air. Other Chupwala... Other pages seized the Chupwala. The statuettes and teacups and terrapins all plummeted to the ground, but Blabbermouth was rushing to the edge of the command hill as fast as her legs would carry her. And when she reached the edge, she threw the bomb away down the hillside, where it exploded in an enormous, but now harmless, ball of black flames. The helmet had fallen from her head. Her long hair cascaded around her shoulders for all to see. Bolo, the general, Mudra, and Rashid rushed out of the tent when they heard the explosion. Blabbermouth was out of breath, but grinning happily. "So, we just about got that in time," she said. "What a creep that Chupwala was. He was ready to commit suicide to get blown up right along with us. I told you it was a trick." Prince Bolo, who didn't like his pages to say, "I told you so," snapped back. "What's this, Blabbermouth? Are you a girl?" "You noticed, sire," said Blabbermouth. "No point pretending anymore." "You tricked us," said Bolo, blushing. "You tricked me." Blabbermouth was outraged by Bolo's ingratitude. "Tricking you isn't exactly difficult. Excuse me," she cried. "Jugglers can do it, so why not, girls?" Bolo went red in the face behind his red nose warmer. "You're fired!" he shouted at the top of his voice. "Bolo, hang it all," began General Katab. "Oh, no, I'm not," Blabbermouth shouted back. "Mister, I quit." Mudra, the Shadow Warrior, had been observing these goings-on with utterly inscrutable expression on his green face. Now, however, his hands began to move, his legs to adopt eloquent positions, his facial muscles to ripple and twitch. Rashid translated, "We must not quarrel when the battle is about to begin. If Prince Bolo has no further need of so courageous a page, then perhaps Miss Blabbermouth would care to work for me?" At which point... Prince Bolo of Gup looked crestfallen and ashamed, and Miss Blabbermouth looked exceptionally pleased. The battle was joined, at last. Rashid Khalifa, watching the action from the Guppy command hill, was very much afraid that the pages of Gup would be beaten badly. "Torn up would be the right term for pages, I suppose," he reflected, "or perhaps burned." His sudden capacity for bloodthirsty thoughts amazed him. "I suppose war makes people crude," he told himself. The black-nosed Chupwala army, whose menacing silence hung over it like a fog, looked too frightening to lose. Meanwhile, the Guppies were still busily arguing over every little detail. Every order was sent down from the command hill, had to be debated fully, with the pros and the cons, even if it came from General Katab himself. How is it possible to fight a battle with all this chatter and natter? Rashid wondered, perplexed. But then the armies rushed at each other, and Rashid saw, to his great surprise, that the Chupwalas were quite unable to resist the Guppies. The pages of Gup, now that they had talked through everything so fully, fought hard, remained united, supported each other when required to do so, and in general, looked like a force with a common purpose. All those arguments and debates, all that openness, had created powerful bonds of fellowship between them. The Chupwalas, on the other hand, turned out to be a disunited rabble, just as Mudra the Shadow Warrior had predicted. Many of them actually had to fight their own treacherous shadows, and as for the rest, well, their vows of silence and habits of secrecy had made them suspicious and distrustful of one another. They had no faith in their generals either. The upshot was that the Chupwalas did not stand shoulder to shoulder, but betrayed one another, stabbed one another in the back, mutinied, hid, deserted. And, after the shortest clash imaginable, simply threw down all their weapons and ran away. After the victory at Batmakaro, the army or library of Gup entered Chup City in triumph. At the sight of Mudra, many Chupwalas threw in their lot with the Guppies. Chupwala maidens rushed black-nosed into the icy streets and garlanded the red-nosed and halo-headed Guppies with the black snowdrops and kissed them too and called them liberators of Chup. Blabbermouth, her loose flowing hair no longer concealed beneath a velvet cap or halo helmet, attracted the attention of several of the young lads of Chup City. But she stayed as close as she could to Mudra, as did Rashid Khalifa. And both Rashid and Blabbermouth found their thoughts turning constantly to Harun. Where was he? Was he safe? When would he return? Prince Bolo, who was out in front of his prancing mechanical horse, began to shout out in his habitual dashing but rather foolish way, "Where are you, Khatam Shud? Come out, your minions are defeated, and now it's your turn. Batcheat, never fear, Bolo is here. Where are you, Batcheat, my golden girl, my love, Batcheat, oh, Batcheat mine? If you would be quiet for a moment, you'd know soon enough where your Batcheat waits." A Chupwala voice called out from the crowd that had gathered to greet the Guppies. Many Chupwalas had started breaking the laws of silence now, cheering, shouting, and so on. "Yes, use your ears," a woman's voice agreed. "Can't you hear that racket that's been driving us all to drink?" "She sings," Prince Bolo exclaimed, cupping a hand around his ear. "My Batcheat sings! Then hush, friends, and hearken to her song." He raised an arm. The Guppy parade came to a halt. And now, wafting down to them from the citadel of Chup, came a woman's voice singing songs of love. It was the most horrible voice Rashid Khalifa, the Shah of Blah, had heard in all his life. "If that's Batcheat," he thought, but did not dare to say, "then you can almost understand why the cult master wants to shut her up for good."
"Oh, I'm talking about my Bolo and ain't got time for nothing else," sang Batcheat.
And glass shattered in shop windows. "I'm sure I know that song, but the words seem different," puzzled Rashid.
"Let me tell you about a boy I know. He's my Bolo and I love him so," sang Batcheat.
And men and women in the crowd begged, "No more, no more." Rashid frowned and shook his head. "Yes, yes, it's very familiar too, but not exactly right. He won't play polo, he can't fly solo. Oh wee, but I love him true. Our love will grow low. I'll never let him go low. For those waiting for my Bolo blues," sang Batcheat, and Prince Bolo shouted, "Beautiful, that's so beautiful." To which the crowd of Chupwalas rejoined, "Ugh, somebody stop her, please.
His name ain't Rolo, his voice ain't Lolo. Uh-huh, but I love him fine, so stop the sholo. Pay me what you owe-lo, I'm gonna make that Bolo mine."
sang Batsheet, and Prince Bolo, cavorting on his horse, almost swooned with delight. "Just listen to that," he rhapsodized. "Is that a voice, or what is it?"
"It must be a what is it," the crowd shouted back, "because a voice it certainly is not."
Prince Bolo is deeply miffed. "Those persons obviously cannot appreciate fine contemporary singing," he said loudly to General Katavan Mudra, "so I think we should attack the citadel now, if you don't mind." At that moment, a miracle happened. The ground shook beneath their feet. Once, twice, thrice, the houses of Choop City trembled. Many Choopwalas, and guppies too, cried out in terror. Prince Bolo fell off his horse. "An earthquake, an earthquake!" people shouted. But it was no ordinary earthquake. It was the entire moon, Kahani, with a mighty shuddering and a mighty juddering spinning on its axis toward the... "Look at the sky!" voices were shouting. "Look what's coming up over the horizon!" Towards the sun. The sun was rising over Choop City, over the citadel of Choop. It was rising rapidly and went on rising until it was directly overhead, blazing down in the full fury of its noonday heat. And there it stayed. Many Choopwalas, including Mudra, the Shadow Warrior, took really rather fashionable wraparound dark glasses out of their pockets and put them on. Sunrise. It tore away the shrouds of silence and shadows which the sorcery of Khatam Shud had hung around the citadel. The black ice of that dark fortress received the sunlight like a mortal wound. The locks on the citadel gates melted away. Prince Bolo, with drawn sword, galloped through the open gates, followed by Mudra and several chapters of pages. "Batsheet!" Bolo cried as he charged. His horse whinnied at the name. "Bolo!" came the faraway reply. Bolo dismounted and, with Mudra, ran up flights of stairs and through courtyards and up more staircases all the while all around him the pillars of Khatam Shud's citadel, softened by the sun's heat, began to buckle and bend. Arches were drooping, cupolas melting. The shadowless servants of the cult master, the members of the Union of the Zipped Lips, were running blindly hither and yon, smashing into walls, knocking one another out as they collided, and shrieking dreadfully, all laws of silence forgotten in their fear. It was the moment of Khatam Shud's final destruction. As Bolo and the Shadow Warrior leapt upwards into the melting heart of the citadel, the prince's cries of "Batsheet!" brought walls and towers tumbling down. And at last, just as they were despairing about her safety, the Princess Batsheet came into sight with that nose in a black Choopwala nose warmer, those teeth. But there's no need to go into that. Let's just say there was no question but that it was indeed Batsheet. Followed by her handmaidens, sliding down toward them along the banister of a grand staircase whose steps had melted away, Bolo waited. Batsheet flew off the banister into his arms. He staggered backward, but did not fall. Now the air was full of great groaning noise. As Bolo, Batsheet, Mudra, and the handmaidens fled down, down through soggy courtyards and down squashy staircases, they looked back and saw high above them, at the very apex of the citadel, the gigantic ice statue, the colossal ice idol of tongueless, grinning, many-toothed Bezaban, beginning to totter and shake, and then drunkenly, it fell. It was like the fall of a mountain. What remained of the halls and courtyards of the citadel of Choop was utterly smashed as Bezaban crashed down. The statue's huge head snapped off at the neck and came rolling and bouncing down the terraces of the citadel toward the lowest courtyard where Bolo, Mudra, and the ladies now stood at the citadel's gates, watching these events with fascinated horror, with Rashid Khalifa, General Katab, and a great host of guppies and Choopwalas gathered at their backs. Down and down the great head bounced. Its ears, its nose broke off as it hit the ground. The teeth fell from its mouth. Down and down it came. Then, look, shouted Rashid Khalifa, pointing, and a moment later, look out! He had seen an unimpressive little figure in a hooded cloak come scurrying out into this lowest courtyard of the citadel, a skinny, scrawny, sniveling, dribbling, mingy, stingy, weasley, measly, clerkish sort of fellow who had no shadow, but seemed almost as much a shadow as a man. It was the cult master Khatam Shud, running for his life. He heard Rashid's cry too late, whirling around with a fiendish yell, and saw the huge head of the Colossus of Bezaban as it arrived, hitting him squarely on the nose. It crushed him to bits. Not a shred of him was ever seen again. The head, grinning toothlessly, sat in that courtyard and continued slowly to melt. Peace broke out. The new government of the land of Chup, headed by Mudra, announced its desire for a long and lasting peace with Gup, a peace in which night and day, speech and silence, would no longer be separated into zones by twilight strips and walls of force. Mudra invited Miss Blabbermouth to stay with him to learn the gesture language Abhinaya, so that she might act as go-between for the Guppy authorities and those of Chup, and Blabbermouth gladly accepted. In the meanwhile, Guppy water genies were on flying mechanical birds were sent to search the ocean, and after a short time, they located the incapacitated Hoopoe, being drawn north by Guppy and Baga, with three exhausted but happy spies upon its back. Haroon was reunited with his father, and with Blabbermouth, who seemed oddly awkward and shy in his presence, which was more or less how he felt in hers. They met on the shores of Chup in what had been the Twilight Strip, and everyone set off contentedly for Gup City, because there was a marriage to arrange. Back in Gup City, the speaker of the chatterbox announced certain promotions. If was named Chief Water Genie, Molly was named Head Floating Gardener, and Guppy and Baga were appointed leaders of all the plenty maw fishes in the sea. These four were given the joint responsibility for a very large cleaning up operation, which was to begin at once across the length and breadth of the ocean of the streams of Story. They announced that they were especially anxious to restore the old zone as soon as possible, so that these ancient tales could be fresh and new once more. Rashid Khalifa was given back his Story Water facilities and awarded the Land of Gup's highest decoration, the Order of the Open Mouth, in recognition of his exceptional services during the war. The newly appointed Chief Water Genie agreed to reconnect Rashid's water supply personally. But the Hoopoe was quickly restored to its normal self, just as soon as Gup Service Station had fitted it with its spare brain. And Princess Batshee? She had survived her imprisonment unharmed, although her fear of having her mouth sewn up had left her with a hatred of needles that would last her whole life. And on the day of her wedding to Prince Bolo, the two of them looked so happy and so much in love as they stood in the palace balcony waving to the crowd of guppies and visiting chupwallas gathered below, that everyone decided to forget about how incredibly idiotic Batsheet had been to get herself captured in the first place, and about how Bolo's many pieces of foolish behavior during the war that followed. After all, if the water genie whispered to Haroon as they stood together on the balcony, a little away from the happy couple, it's not as if we really let our crowned heads do anything very important around here. A great victory has been won, Old King Chatterjee was saying to the crowd, a victory for our ocean over its enemy, but also a victory for the new friendship and openness between Chup and Gup over our old hostility and suspicion. A dialogue has been opened, and to celebrate that, as well as this wedding, let all the people sing. Even better, suggested Bolo, let Batsheet serenade us, let her golden voice be heard. There was a brief silence. Then, with one voice, the crowd roared, No, not that! Spare us if you please! Batsheet and Bolo both looked so hurt that it was necessary for Old King Chatterjee to save the day by saying, soothingly, What the people mean is that on your wedding day, they wish to show their love by singing to you. Which was not precisely true, but it cheered the couple up, and then the square was full of song. Batshee kept her mouth shut, and everyone was as happy as could be. As he left the balcony behind the royal party, Haroon was approached by an egghead. "You are to present yourself at once at P2C2E House," the egghead said coldly. The walrus wants to talk to the person who destroyed so much irreplaceable machinery so willfully. "But it was a good cause," Haroon protested. The egghead shrugged. "I don't know about that," he said as he walked off. "That's for you to argue and the walrus to decide."